She was working hard at a New York job, making dough, but it made her blue. One day she was crying a lot, and so she decided to move to West Covina, California. Brand new pals and new career. It happens to be where Josh lives, but that's not why she's there.
She's a crazy ex-girlfriend.
What? No, she's not.
She's a crazy ex-girlfriend.
That's a sexist term.
She's a crazy ex-girlfriend.
Can you please stop singing for just a second?
She's so broken inside.
The situation's a lot more nuanced than that.
C-R-A-Z-Y.
Okay, we get it.
Crazy ex-girlfriend.
Welcome to a special edition of the Serious TV Drama Podcast. I'm Scott, and I'm being joined by Jason this evening. I was going to come up with a little, you know, character-to-character kind of comparison here, but I couldn't decide which one of us was Greg and which one of us was Josh, and or if I was Rachel or Rebecca, I mean, or if you were Paula, or maybe you should be Mrs. Hernandez. I didn't know where to go, so I figured, let's just get to it, you know?
If I was Mrs. Hernandez, you would be talking by yourself.
I know, so... In other words, my podcasting dream come true. No, I'm just kidding. I kid myself.
I always think of myself more of as a Greg without all the alcohol.
See, I think of myself as a Greg with aspirations for the alcohol. Anyway, getting to the point of why we're here. We are here to do a special little podcast based on the first five episodes of season two of Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. Now, as some of our listeners know, we've been doing a podcast for the last several weeks just based on the four CW superhero shows that I get together with, obviously with Dan, as well as Jason and two of our other friends, Kate and Vicky. However, it has occurred to me on more than one occasion that a lot of the folks who might listen to our podcast when we do Fargo or Better Call Saul or a few other things don't watch superhero shows. And thus, they don't listen to those podcasts. So they've probably had many months since they've gotten to hear the Serious TV Drama Podcast. So Jason and I, we did a few podcasts over the summer where we covered a bunch of seasons of shows that Dan didn't watch, so I got to do it with you instead. That was pretty cool. And one show that we both had a similar level of affection for was another show on the CW, which was Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, right?
That is correct. Let me tell you, this is one of those shows that I absolutely fell in love with. I know I said this last time, but it's one of those shows that I absolutely fell in love with within the first 10 minutes of watching it.
And I think one of the things I really love about the show is, number one, it's different than anything else I watch on TV. I mean, that goes without saying. I mean, it's a musical comedy. I don't generally watch, I don't even know if there are any other musical comedies on TV at this point. I don't think so.
No, there's not.
And what's amazing about it is, you know, I have some friends who are anti-musicals. I have some who enjoy the occasional musical. I like musicals, good ones, whatever. I pay, you know, whether it's everything from Singing in the Rain right through, you know, Book of Mormon and everything in between. This is a show that more often than not, the song numbers are actually not just well done. They're pretty funny. They can be as funny, if not funnier, than anything else on each episode, quite frankly. I think you'd agree with me on that.
Oh, I absolutely agree with that. And, you know, they absolutely hit some home runs right out of the gate in these first five episodes. And that's what we're going to talk about as we get to it.
Now, before we talk about the specific five episodes of the season, and we're not going to go too crazy with recapping and anything like that, because anyone who's listening to this podcast, we have to assume you're watching the show already. If you're not watching the show, I'm not really sure why you'd want to listen to a podcast about it. So I'm not going to be worrying about spoilers or anything of that nature.
Mm-hmm. Unless you want us to sell us on it, and then that's the case. Hey,
yeah, there you go.
Watch the show, then come back and listen to us when you get done.
There you go. But before we talk about the content of the episodes, I think we should point out the fact that they changed the theme song for this season. Now, you just heard a rather bizarre rendition that we attempted of the season one theme song, but they changed things up this season. So let's first listen to that, just so we're all on the same page as what they did this season for Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
I'm just a girl in love. La, 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 la. underlying issues to address. I'm certifiably cute and adorably obsessed.
They say love makes you crazy, therefore you can't call her crazy. Cause when you call her crazy, you're just calling her in love.
Blam!
Now, I have to admit, when I first saw and heard the theme song this season, the very first episode, I was a little taken aback. I think because I was expecting the traditional opening from last season. So it took me at least an additional episode for me to warm up to the new theme. How did you react to it when you first saw and heard it?
I was disappointed because I had so enjoyed that opening from the previous season. And I thought it was going to be a one-off thing, but by the second episode, no, it was going to be the opening for the rest of the year, and it's something that I'm going to have to get used to. I'm not quite loving it yet.
Well, there are some real reasons why they made the change. They didn't do it capriciously. They didn't do it because we just want to have a new song, which that could have been their reasoning. They really wanted to show how the show and the character has changed. I have an article right in front of me that I'm going to crib some ideas from. There's actually several articles about this online, but I'm reading a few lines from an article from Vulture about it. But paraphrasing what the showrunners talk about here, but the first season of Crazy Ex-Girlfriend was really all about denial. She denied that she was there for Josh because she was always saying that she was there for the job. So that was really one of the overriding themes of the series, that she just was pretending that she loved the place, and she really doesn't admit what she's doing there and why she's there until the very end of the first season. So, so they needed a new song to address their new emotional thesis statement, which is, anything that you do for love is therefore justifiable. So what they're saying here is, the first season was about denial. Now it's about rationalization. Now it's about, and when you listen to the lyrics of that song, it's actually a very bizarre little song. And I think the more you pay attention to it, the more you may grow to appreciate it. Why I was able to enjoy it more after seeing it a couple times is, again, this is a show that's, based on, has a musical at its core. And that whole number, the very first musicals I ever saw as a small child that my mother exposed me to, before we got to the Gene Kelly ones and Fred Astaire, were the Busby Berkeley things from the 1930s. They're all called like Gold Diggers of This or That, or 42nd Street was a Busby Berkeley musical, whatever, which had these very elaborate musical numbers with all these girls in these kind of outfits, whatever. And that's totally what this opening is a takeoff on. It's every second of it is basically a parody and inspired by the Busby Berkeley musicals of the 30s. So that's kind of neat that they add it. And they do that, as you know, they do that on the show from time to time. They will pay homage to different styles or different movie musical things from previous eras, like the Settle for Me.
Great,
which is totally, that could have been something that Fred Astaire would have been singing to Ginger Rogers in a movie back in the 30s or something.
Yeah, so that's one of my favorites from the first season.
Yeah, it's a great number. And I think one of the really interesting things about the opening credit now is the way it ends, because that's the hint about the instability and now there's something off, because if the song had just ended where the song ends, it would be like, okay, that's a song with some disturbing lyrics, if you really think about it, but okay, but it's still pleasant. And then her face comes bursting out of Josh's face, which is a little strange, and also totally Busby Berkeley moment there. But the fact that we stay on that that not quite freeze moment for an additional 2 seconds is disturbing.
It's about 1.5 seconds too long.
Yeah, but that
you want to look away.
It's an analogous to her and the things that she does. You kind of want to look away at times. There are moments, even now, when I thought maybe her character had grown in some ways. In some ways, her character has grown since the first season. But she still does and says things which makes you go, oh no, you're not on your meds.
Right.
And she doesn't seem, I don't know, I know she has medications, I don't know if she takes them, because I remember her throwing out medications all the time.
Yeah, that was a big moment of the first episode was she tossed all her meds down the drain.
Right.
And I don't think she ever went back and got any. Well, I take that back, she did go to the therapist.
Well, she is seeing, we do know she's continuing to see that therapist this season. although I love the fact the therapist is, you know, you clearly don't listen to anything I say. Why am I seeing you? It's like, oh, I think she wants to buy a kayak or something like that.
She wants something, yeah.
I think it's a kayak. I think it's something really weird like that. So, anyway, I just wanted to address the new opening song and also give us an excuse to play it. So if you didn't like our version of season one, hopefully you liked hearing the actual season two opening song. All right. So let's start. Let's remember how season one ended, actually. Because if I recall, it ended at the episode, a lot of it took place at a wedding, right? It was,
you're correct.
You said, I think Josh's sister?
I think it was Josh's sister got married? Yeah.
I couldn't remember if it was Josh's sister. Yeah, it has to be, yeah, someone in Josh's family. That's right, because the whole wedding dress fiasco from an earlier episode.
Valencia was in the wedding, and Rebecca wasn't invited. She ended up going anyway.
Right. That was a whole lot. But the major plot points, because we're not recapping the end of last season either, the major plot points where we got left off last season were, it's the moment at the wedding when Rebecca thinks that, oh, maybe she does have genuine feelings for Greg. And unfortunately, that's when Greg goes off and drinks way too much and basically acts like a jerk. I don't remember exactly what it is he says, but he basically blows her off, essentially.
Yeah, pretty much.
And at the same point in time, Valencia essentially dumps Josh when she realizes that, you know, he's never going to really want to commit to her, even though she had invested all these years into that relationship. So at a certain point later on, you know, Josh and Rebecca find themselves together, and, you know, the stars finally seemingly align for Rebecca, and she and Josh do it. And that could have been, you know, oh, what a sweet, happy ending, no pun intended, for the season. But then it goes on just a little bit further, right?
That's correct. Rebecca ends up saying something about a future with Josh, and Josh gets a weird look on his face like, oh my God, what have I done?
Right. And I think also Greg realizes, you know, in between, you know, puking bouts at his toilet, that he should have told her that he loved her after all. So an ending to the season, which could have been triumphant, which would have been weird, quite frankly, considering the subject matter of the show, turns out maybe tragic is a little strong, but it's like, oh, this might not be so great. Let's see how season two starts.
Right. You know, you don't want the crazy ex-girlfriend to end up winning in the end of the first season.
Yeah. It's not, unless you're ending the season. And even then, she really shouldn't win. That's not really.
She shouldn't win. No.
So we start off with the first episode of the season, which was called Where is Josh's Friend? Which, I also want to point out, was actually both co-written and directed by Mark Webb, who I think had directed another episode last season. But Mark Webb's actually a big deal feature film director. You know, he's the guy who I think directed, he might have co-written, can't remember, but I know he directed 500 Days of Summer. It was his first big movie. He also did those Spider-Man movies, which we don't want to talk about. But
that's why he's back to TV.
No, he switches back and forth. He still made he made hundreds of millions off of that crap. But I think of 500 Days of Summer more because that had that awesome flash mob routine to the Hall & Oates song, which is probably my favorite part of that whole movie, quite frankly. So I always think, oh, he's the perfect person to direct. It's just because of that, you know, 3 minutes in 500 Days of Summer. So when we start off the season, I mean, the first episode pretty much sets things up for the season. Now, at this point, is Josh staying at Rebecca's house at that point? Isn't he?
Yes, he's been kicked out of Valencia's, and he's like a nomad, so he ends up staying at Rebecca's. And Rebecca's all excited because she thinks he's moved in, while he's in denial, like he thinks he's just staying there.
Right, and he's trying to keep that certain level of distance between them, not just figuratively but literally, because generally speaking, he's couch surfing while he's there. You know, he's not sleeping in her bed with her. He continues to go to sleep on the couch downstairs. He does show up in her bedroom for other things, but not to actually sleep, it seems. At least that's the impression I had gotten from the episode.
No, you're right. You're correct.
So, I think we do get a little bit of a taste of the Rebecca denial stuff from last season, because she's kind of convinced that Josh has fallen for her, but she's got this kind of a guilt situation. And she feels she needs to resolve matters with Greg because she never technically officially broke up with Greg to get together with Josh. Although, her relationship with Greg, I was wondering, were you guys a real couple or not? I was never very clear in what you would call the Rebecca and Greg combination there.
I don't think they knew what they were either. You know, they had that wonderful 3 days where
non-stop sex.
Yeah, that's all they did.
hence the UTI.
Right in the whole "I think I like you" song too.
Right.
But no, they never really did have like an official relationship. Every date they went on ended in disaster at some point. But you know, I guess even the wedding, when they went to the wedding, you know, that ended up. And then when you get to the beginning of this season, he's gone. He's disappeared. He's been not seen for, what, 30 days? I think is how long it's been.
I think it had been at least 3 weeks. I think it's about 3 weeks since the previous season. Yeah, no one knows what's happened to him. And so Rebecca feels she needs to track him down. And, of course, she tries to enlist the help of Paula, who does help her. But I guess in that episode, Paul just starts realizing, hey, you know what, a lot of the show is about unhealthy relationships, quite frankly, and this aspect of her relationship with Rebecca, maybe not so healthy for Paula. And if you think about season one, Paula was very much a driving force quite often throughout that season. I mean,
Yes, she was.
I mean,
she was always pushing the relationship.
Yeah.
She was like, you love Josh, go get Josh. Let's do this crazy scheme here. Throw a rock through his window.
Right. She fell prey to the obsession, the way, you know, of Rebecca's, where she became just almost as obsessed as Rebecca was, if not more so. I mean, I remember I liked Paul a lot, but I would almost get frustrated because she was always bad-mouthing Greg. It's like, no, Greg's a much better fit for her because, you know, he actually has a working brain, where Josh, not the smartest guy.
But, and a lot of that has to do with the fact that she had a poor relationship with her family and her husband. And once that started to strengthen at the end of last year, going to this year, you know, she sees that, you know, maybe Rebecca's not that good for her.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, when you look at a show like Crazy Ex-Girlfriend and you're really tending to focus on, you know, the Rebecca Bunch character and how does that character learn or evolve or not, you know, and we know that she does have her issues, hence the show be called Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, not, you know, Perfectly Rational Ex-Girlfriend. But in fact, Paul is the one who also has a lot of character growth from the beginning to the end of the season. And then we see it culminate in this episode where now she needs to make some decisions because it's not healthy. It's not healthy for her, and maybe it's not really healthy for Rebecca either, because Paula is her biggest enabler. You know, she's the Norton to her Cramden with every scheme, just about. And maybe that's why Paula kind of needs to separate that. Like, you know, I want to be your friend, but this isn't something we should be doing. Because it's like feeding an addiction, I think. And that's why I think, and she becomes prey to the addiction as well. So that's why she really needs to call a halt to it, I think.
Oh, you're right. You're absolutely right. And that's where the contract comes in, right?
Yeah, she draws up a contract for them. And it's also appropriate that I'm talking about looking at it like addiction, because that's also an issue on the show, and that leads us to Greg because they do eventually track him down. And it turns out that he's actually attending Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. That he, you know, has come to grips with the fact that, hey, he's actually has a serious drinking problem. And what I find interesting about that is, I think when we were watching season one, and you can correct me if you saw it differently, it was one of those things like, it didn't really hit me that he had a drinking problem until we got to that last episode. And then you start reflecting on different things in the show. It's like, oh, you know.
It was one of those things where they hid something from you in plain sight the whole time.
And the fact that, you know, the fact that he works in a bar doesn't matter. You know what? Sam Malone worked in a bar and he was an alcoholic. You know, it's one of those. And on Rescue Me, Dennis Leary buys a bar and he's an alcoholic. Of course, he kept drinking. So I think it's almost like a TV trope where the alcoholic has to at one point own a bar or work in a bar. Because, of course, that makes perfect sense, you know. No, it doesn't. But it's an interesting issue because it's, again, it's a musical comedy show, but this is a serious issue. Then again, Rebecca's mental issues probably should be a serious issue.
It's a serious issue, too, yeah.
Though we kind of make light of them from time to time. But I do like every once in a while you'll have a moment where you realize, yeah, this is kind of a serious thing. But it's one of the things I think the show really deftly handles very well, for the most part.
They really strike a good balance, and kudos to the showrunners for doing it.
Absolutely.
Because this is not the only mature subject that they tackle this season.
Oh,
we'll get to that later.
Oh, that's going to be a major point of conversation, absolutely. So I thought this was a really solid opener to the season as far as really setting the storylines in place, because by the time you're done with the pilot, not pilot, the premiere, we see the change in Rebecca's character and where she's trying to go. We see what Josh's situation is. We see what Greg's situation is, and the different kind of paths they're going to go on. And just as importantly, we'll see where Paul is trying to go. So it's a very good setup for the next several episodes, I thought. And we actually did get, as often is the case, we did get a couple good songs in there. I think the highlight of that one is probably the "We Should Definitely Not Have Sex Right Now" number that Rebecca and Josh did. Again, it's one of those where the lyrics just get funnier as the song progresses. I think there's a part in the song where, you know, well, we shouldn't stop now because it would be even weirder if we stopped. We should finish having sex first. Oh, this show. So then we got to the next episode, which was titled, and I love that they're still doing the thing with the titles where they all have to have Josh in the title. It's usually a question about Josh or something connected to Josh. I wonder how long they can keep doing that, but they're still doing it. So episode two was, "When Will Josh See How Cool I Am?" So that's the ping pong episode, right?
Yes, it's the ping pong episode, yes.
But there is a whole lot of other things that happen in this episode. I think this has one of your favorite songs in it, right?
Yes. Yeah, it has my favorite song of the whole season so far. It's Greg's drinking song.
I will always enjoy the Greg songs. I mean, he's, because his voice, his character really comes through, and I think we both relate to that character to a certain extent, so maybe that's why I prefer him to say, like, the Josh songs. But
right. He's such a smug a-hole sometimes when it comes to the songs.
Oh, I can relate to that, too. So there you go.
He's got that look, and he's so deadpan about it. He's like, yeah, what of it? This is me.
Right. What some of the really important things that happen in that episode is, I think it's when we get to that episode that Rebecca actually tells him about the fact that she's been sleeping with Josh. I think it's in that episode, isn't it? It has to be.
Yes, it is. It's, and Rebecca doesn't tell Greg. It's
Josh tells him. Josh tells Greg. That's right. Right.
So he's trying to be cool with Father Bra about it because he wants to tell him. Father Bra's like, no, don't do it. It's not a good idea. And of course, he sees Greg and he just goes up there and he tries to make small talk and he just blurts it out anyway.
He immediately does.
And he says, wow, I feel a lot better. Meanwhile, you just see Greg's Greg's face just gets stone silent on it. And he's also sitting there with Heather, and Heather's like, "You're not a robot. You have emotions." And Greg's like, "Nope, nope, not gonna say anything.
Oh, Heather.
I'm just gonna get up and go to work." And meanwhile, you can hear you can feel the rage building in him.
Mm-hmm.
And you hear that the refrain from last year, that Whoopty Freaking Do song.
Oh, is it the one that I could if I wanted to?
I could if I wanted to.
Yeah, that's a good number. Well, it's interesting because this was basically the fear that he had off and on throughout season one, because he always knew that, you know, even if it wasn't expressly said, that Rebecca had this issue or obsession or whatever as far as Josh was concerned. And, you know, so the fact that this actually happened, like, oh, worst fears come true. Although I do kind of wonder if after going through the AA stuff and making amends and everything else, if even at this early stage, he in any way thought he was going to get back together with her. I didn't think he was going to try to get back with Rebecca at this point. At least that's not the way I interpreted it.
It's possible. I mean, he could be in denial about not wanting to do it.
Right.
You could tell he still cared because he punched the wall.
That's true. And again, this show is all about denial, you know. also, we should, flipping back to the little law firm, Paula has, you know, decided that she wants to actually finally pursue a career in law. Because she's always, you know, she's helping with the briefs and she's amazingly talented, and this is where her skills really lie. And, you know, it's not too late. You know, she's trying to apply to this, I guess it's a law school, but she really kind of needs a letter of recommendation. So she's kind of waiting on Rebecca to do one for her. Mm-hmm. And kind of think Rebecca lets her down.
Yeah, Rebecca's a really bad friend to her in this episode. It's one of those things where it's probably something that Rebecca could have just dashed off in like 10 minutes and be done with it. But instead she keeps putting it off and putting it off because she wants to learn how to play ping pong instead.
Right.
To impress Josh.
Well, it's a reminder that, in case anyone needed it, is that quite often Rebecca can be a really selfish person. And it's interesting. I think she believes that the fact that she does sometimes do these amazing things for people, amazing gestures, whatever, that somehow that karmically that cancels out the fact that more often she's incredibly narcissistic, you know, and incredibly selfish in all other matters. I got news for her just from personal life. Yeah, life, unfortunately, doesn't work that way.
Right. Right. And I feel like I'm doing this a lot, but this also references back to also season one where she does the whole "I'm a good person, yes, it's true" song, where she increasingly does wacky things that are not good, like threaten to cut a guy's throat. That's Rebecca. She'll say she's a good person, but, you know, sometimes her actions does not show it out.
Well, yeah, again, she, what I mentioned earlier, like season one is a lot about denial. She's in denial about so much stuff, and that's her trying to convince herself as well as others that she's a good person is a pretty big emblematic of that, quite frankly, because you mean well at times, Rebecca, but you're not great. Thing is, just because you're not, you may not necessarily be a bad person, doesn't necessarily mean you're such a great person either. You know, she's flawed. A little bit more so, but she's
deeply flawed. She's more flawed than others.
But the thing with Rebecca, what's interesting is the more you determine that she actually has anything mentally wrong with her, you know, that she actually has, you know, specific mental issues, that's where those things can become forgivable. It's not saying that she can't help herself, but to some extent, maybe she can't. Maybe she needs to work these things out, whether it be through therapy or any other means, or being on medication, whatever. It's just like someone who's bipolar or manic depressive or whatever. I mean, it's not that, but she's got issues. And again, we knew that from the get-go. They didn't like hide that from us. on this show.
Oh, no. No, definitely not.
So I think it's Daryl who ends up writing the letter for Paula, right?
Isn't it? Yes. Yeah. And matter of fact, he's the one that was going throughout the whole episode. Like, he had it ready to go. Like, as soon as she asked, like, here you go. Here's the letter for you. And she kept putting him off because she was waiting for Rebecca.
Yeah, it's funny. It's because, you know, Rebecca kind of is set up to be as though she was Paula's new best friend over the last year or so. And Daryl is the character who so wants, you know...
He wants to be part of the crowd.
He wants to be part of the crowd. But, you know, he wants affirmation. He wants to be liked or even loved. He is craving friendship more than anyone else on the show. You know, he doesn't want to be seen as the boss. You know, he wants to be their friend, and specifically with Paula. And it's almost tragic when you watch this episode, and, you know, it's like he's there waiting. He's like, I can do this for you. I can do this for you. But no, I'm going to keep waiting for her. I'm going to keep waiting. And Paula just keeps waiting for the person who has consistently kind of let her down.
Right.
So it's all these kind of little weird relationships, and people don't realize how good they have it or who the right people are, whether it be love or friendship or work or whatever. So it's an interesting thing that they do on the show.
It's a good point.
Oh, wait, and since we kind of didn't really mention either the last episode or this one, should also mention that one of the storylines that we are going with this season is also the relationship between Daryl and White Josh. So I like that they're keeping that going, that you have this relationship between these two men, and it does become a bigger issue in later episodes as well. And I'm kind of appreciative of how they handled that. But Daryl, who, it's funny, it's a musical comedy, so it's really hard to call a character comic relief when they're all funny at one point or another. But Daryl has always played more as comic relief than anyone else, I think, on the show, because he's this kind of very kind of a silly, goofy guy, basically.
He looks a little different. He dresses strange.
Yeah, he's got a mustache. but I do appreciate at least that later in the season they do give him a little bit more to work with, where you realize, oh, there's something more to him as well, which we do remember from season one when he was dealing with his divorce and wanting to be with his kid. And he did get one of the funniest songs of the season, if I recall.
Yes. He loves his daughter, but not in that way.
Yeah, not in that way.
I'm glad you brought up White Josh, because he's one of those characters that I'm surprised I ended up liking as much as I did. And I look forward to seeing him more on the screen. Him and his friend Hector had pretty good banter this episode about where's Greg? What happened to Greg? And at one point, when Rebecca's there, this is the line of the episode, is when Hector says, I can't believe everybody wants to sleep with this girl. My friends want to sleep with this girl. In terms of Josh and Greg, it had me rolling.
For a bit, that's like, did you just misquote your favorite quote? Because I was
that would have been funny.
The stuff with White Josh is also very well done, because they took someone who there wasn't really that much to. He had like a moment or two last season, but not much more than that. And they really did more with that character. So the storylines that deal with Daryl and White Josh are not, end up not feeling like time killers. It's like, no, I'm actually invested in this. I'm actually curious about this relationship and where it's going to go. And the fact that, you know, whether it's, you know, it's not just the fact that it's two men, but you have the definite generation gap between them, and you have a child in the situation as well. I like that they do eventually deal with those kind of things as the show goes on.
Mm-hmm.
So let's get to the third episode of the season, which was titled All Signs Point to Josh, or Is It Josh's Friend? So that's the one where Rebecca believes herself to be torn between these two guys. And I think she spends a lot of the episode like looking for a sign. And we know from season one, from the pilot, Rebecca's all about signs. You know?
Literally. Yes, literally.
Correct use of the word literally, which a lot of people don't seem to do anymore. Yeah, was it the sign for like that butter and it shining on Josh and all that, with pointing to Josh, was what led her to West Covina, and then seeing the commercial kind of just confirmed it for her when she was there. So yes, she's all about the fantasy and about, you know, I need to see a sign, I need, you know, or an omen or whatever the heck it is. So she spends the episode trying to figure out who she should be choosing. Is this the episode where we do see that great scene with her and the therapist, where the therapist is like, that's not what really the problem is here?
You know? Yes, it is.
This, you probably shouldn't be with either one of these guys, and it doesn't really sound like either one of these guys really should be with you either. You know? I keep thinking therapist should be like, serenity now, serenity now. I wonder how much she's paying that therapist, because she's clearly not listening to her at all. But I get a kick out of her because I remember her from The Wire, so it's kind of always funny to see her on this show, the woman who plays the therapist. I don't know what her name is. I didn't look it up, unfortunately.
She's D'Angelo's mom. That's all I know her as.
There you go. That's good. You know what? She's from The Wire. That means she's gold. You know,
automatic. Good actor.
There are no bad actors on The Wire, as far as I know. There just aren't. So you have, so that's, I think that's kind of like your A plot, is Rebecca waiting for that sign. And then I guess at a certain point in the episode, she believes it's Greg. Was that the episode where she sees him on the bridge? That whole thing happens in that episode?
Yes. Right. Yes. Yes.
Is that where Greg is also having these conversations with his father about the idea of going back to school, and his father was selling the house? Is that, I think that's happening in that episode as well, if I recall.
It's correct. Greg is wrestling with the decision of leaving town and going to school for real, and not just playing around with it. He's actually going to do it.
Right.
And his dad makes it easy for him by kicking him out of the house by selling it.
Yeah, because if Greg really takes a close look at his life, yeah, he's got a couple guy friends, but you know, you're not 19. You know, he's I don't know how old Greg is supposed to be, but I feel like he's closing in on 30. Is that the impression you get from his character?
That's my, I think so too. I think all of them are supposed to be around the same age.
Yeah, they're in that range. I'm not sure. I don't want to incorrectly state it or nothing, but my guess is that they're at least they're in their late 20s, but I feel like Greg, he feels like borderline 30 to me. Mm-hmm. Anyway, getting too hung up on the age right now. But there's nothing really keeping him there, and he has to see that. And I think his father, and even though I think at that point he had only met her once, or had he even met her yet? I know she shows up at the door at one point. Yeah, she showed up at the door in a previous episode, so he had met her once. I like that his father is very attuned to the fact that this girl isn't right for you. This girl is not the reason to stay here. You need to move on. You need to do something with your life, because Greg has kind of tied his life to his father. It seems like he's someone who's kind of made excuses for not really moving forward. I mean,
right?
Because someone who, you know, clearly is an intelligent guy, clearly can reason things out, whatever, probably shouldn't just be still living at home with his dad and working as a part-time bartender. You know, you feel that it should be something more to that, and not just hanging out with guys and going out to bars occasionally. That he's past the age where that really, I think, becomes acceptable, I think. So it's kind of like Greg needs to grow up, I think. It's the way I
Right, right. Greg's dad is kicking him out of the nest.
Exactly.
Forcing him to fly on his own.
So, but I think, although that's the Greg and Rebecca stuff in many ways has kind of an A-plot feel to it for the episode, I think the more, maybe even more notable in this episode is what goes on with Paula. Because Paula is given like a major, major storyline, beyond the fact that she wants to go to law school. And it leads to some really interesting decisions on this show.
Yes, isn't she forced to go before a judge for a zoning issue? Is that what it is?
Yeah, I believe so.
And the judge ends up asking what law firm she's from, and she's like, "I'm not a lawyer. I'm just a paralegal." And he's really impressed with the way that she is, and the way that she argues in front of him. And she grants he grants whatever she wants. But she's got a twist at the end.
Right, because she finds out that she's pregnant.
And all that reconciliation with her husband from before has led to something unplanned.
Yeah, and she hasn't had the best of luck with kids, as we've seen on countless episodes. Her kids are kind of... She's got shitty kids. they're not, you know, the younger one's kind of dumb, and the older one's kind of not so great himself.
It's almost like I think last year they said the young one had like every single thing under the sun, like autism, ADHD, and all sorts of stuff.
Right, he's definitely on the low end of the spectrum, but in a comical way, not in a let's get really serious about this way. So that's kind of a big deal in this episode, because that pretty much looks like it's going to derail her being able to go to law school, because you know she's going to have to be a mom all over again, and how she hasn't envisioned how she can possibly juggle that, especially the fact how they can even afford a third kid. So it really puts her character in. It's interesting because she ends up having a real problem, whereas Rebecca is dealing with a problem which in many ways is an imagined problem. Because quite frankly, if Rebecca didn't have the issue she has, she would know Josh was never into her to begin with. You know, at most, she was a sex buddy. And Greg really needs to move on because all his dealings with you were kind of unhealthy for both of you. But she's still convinced that, oh, shit, she needs to be with one of these guys, blah, blah, blah. It's her fantasy still. Paula's got reality to deal with. And it's a pretty big reality. So, and in this episode, I remember thinking, I don't know what they're going to do, because I was trying to think of what they might do here, because it's still a comedy show. So I couldn't think of a comical way to deal with it other than her having another child. And I said, really? Are they going to do that? That's really, oh God, I hate that kind of a storyline. But we will see, I guess it's in the next episode, how that plays out. But kind of a big deal.
Yeah, it's once again, it's one of the subjects that not really being made light of. It's being dealt in a serious way. But it's very even-handed. And you could tell, but you don't really know where the show is going to take it. Like, is she going to have the kid? As you said, is she going to have the kid? Is she not going to have the kid?
Right, and I will say, when we were in this episode, I honestly did not think they were going to go in the directions they did. Because that, especially in this day and age, that's a risk. That can be a really big risk. But we'll get to that in a second. Trying to think if there's anything else I want to say about episode 3. It did have a couple good song numbers. The whole math of love triangles was kind of cute.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the one where when she does the whole number and it turns out all the guys she's doing the number with, they're all gay? And
right.
They say that's right. And then they don't know what she's talking about. You're like, no, right. That's not how mathematics worked. and we also get a brief song number, which I wish had been much longer, called Period Sex. That would have been so brilliant if it had gone on longer. It was the little bit we got was great. I wanted there to be more of it. And without getting too graphic for our podcast here, I'll just say, I'm assuming most, if not all of us, have had that experience. and thus you can relate to that song, some of us more than others, especially the ladies, but not the guys too. Just had to put a towel down. Anyway, so, memories.
I think that was a line in the song, wasn't it?
Oh, is it?
I think so.
It's true. It's totally true. Anyway, so let's move on to the fourth episode. Oh, you have something to say?
I have one more thought about that. You were talking about how signs and everything.
Yeah.
And I think Rebecca has like the sign at the end when she opens up the drawer where she kept Greg's sweatshirt, and the light shines on it. And she thinks, oh, Greg's the one. That's what makes her think that Greg's the one. I'm sorry.
Well, it's at the end of the episode where he's leaving, and she's doing the classic romantic comedy, trying to run to the airport to catch him, right?
Yep.
And yep. I think the episode ends with her just catching up to him. So I guess it ends with a cliffhanger, so to speak.
Yeah, and this is a good segue.
I'm glad you kept talking. If this had been our superhero podcast, I would have gotten really pissed off at you. It's like, we stopped talking about the Flash now. We're up to Arrow. Shut up. Anyway, so the fourth episode was titled, and this is one of might be my favorite title. When will Josh and his friend leave me alone? I like that phrase because depending how you read it, it means something else, and it's still about her delusions as well. So yeah, we pick up that episode with her at the airport with Greg, and we get one of the really great song numbers for the season, I believe. And it shows how TV has changed in the last couple decades, where this used to be a word that you couldn't say on TV. It was one of the seven dirty words, but now apparently you can have a whole song called "It Was a Shit Show."
Just as long as you bleep out the word, as you know what he says, but
I was like, they did bleep it out. You know what?
But you know what he says, though.
I think I've gotten so used to basic cable where you can't hear that word. So I just, for some reason, I automatically thought you could hear it on the show as well. But that was a really good number. So we pick up with Greg telling her it was a shit show and that he has to leave, yada, 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 the whole thing. And then it's her trying to deal with the aftermath. This episode is about her dealing with the aftermath of Greg has left and
Josh is gone too.
And Josh is gone
to Josh.
Too.
She's not talking to Josh either.
Yeah, because I think it was the previous episode with it was during the period sex thing. When Josh realized, oh, wait a minute, check please. I need to get out of here. This situation is toxic. This is bad. I should not be here. I need to be on my own out of this house.
Oh, yeah. That's one thing we forgot to mention is that she went to that whole thing where she thought she was pregnant, but she wasn't pregnant. And Josh was just sitting down and it all went through him in like, what was it, 1 minute?
Yep.
And that's when he was out.
Like I said, I didn't want to do a full recap of this, so I'm just trying to gloss over things here and there. So, but one of the fun things in this episode is that Rebecca is being haunted by the memory spirits, I guess, of
poltergeist.
That's right. I love that of both Josh and Greg, which gives us my favorite song of the young season so far. Which was "We Tap That Ass." I've watched that number several times already. I can't stop laughing every time I watch.
So many meanings behind the title of that song. So many meanings.
yeah. There's so much to read it. Oh, what do they mean by that? And even when you watch it, because her reactions to watching these two guys sing about how they've had sex with her pretty much in every single way and place. In that house, it's hard to call it a family show when you have a number like that, but it's a great.
Especially when the finish is where should we finish?
Not. Oh my God! Did she actually say not on my chest?
Yeah, not on my chest.
Oh my God! How can anyone not love this show? But I think when she's trying to exorcise those poltergeists out of her house, she ends up burning down the house. Is that essentially what happens?
She burns down part of her condo, yeah.
Part of it, yeah. And what I loved about that is we got to spend more time with Heather. I love the character of Heather, her next door neighbor. I enjoy seeing more of her whenever possible. But we meet Heather's parents. in that episode. And these are not the parents I think any of us would have expected for Heather, though I don't know if anyone could imagine what her parents could be like, because they certainly couldn't be like her.
No, they're such nice people.
They're perfectly pleasant. They might be the nicest people we've seen on this show, quite frankly, outside of maybe
they are. They are. They probably got some kind of skeletons hidden, but God damn it, I don't want to see that part.
No,
I just want that perfect mental image to say.
So you've got that storyline going on, and then it leads to one of the most outrageous Rebecca schemes that I can think they've had on the show as of yet, where she believes if she reinvents herself as totally. The new spokeswoman or spokesperson, if you want to be non-gender specific, but it has to kind of be a woman, so it should be just spokeswoman for a douche. So she has this total makeover, which gives us a quick little song, Makey Makeover, which is cute. I'm not really sure who came up with the look she has, because it seemed very retro to me. It's like, oh, you're something out of the 70s now. Why?
Pretty much.
I mean, she's kind of wearing like that weird little denim jumpsuit kind of a thing. It looks like something like, you know, Kathy Lee Crosby would have worn in her day or something. And she's got like hair straight out of, you know, Too Close for Comfort or Charlie's Angels or something. It's a very strange look. But it's a very silly, goofy kind of a storyline there are some serious underpinnings when she comes to the realization that she shouldn't be doing what she's doing. But I think the bigger issues in this episode, as far as seriousness, we really need to switch back to the Paula storyline, because we were talking in the previous episode about her finding out about being pregnant. And I think in the previous episode, it felt like she was going to give up on her dream of going back to law school. Although I think she was convinced that she shouldn't do that, but we didn't know what she was going to do as a result. So this episode, we find out she makes a rather major decision. Jason.
Yeah, she does. She makes a major decision, and it's one that's... they didn't show a whole lot of agonizing over, and it's not like they followed her into the doctor's office and showed the whole thing. It was just kind of like it was over with at the end, you know. It's not like they made a huge deal out of it. I mean, you know what happened, but they don't come out right out and say it.
Well, I felt they made a big deal about the situation itself, because the pregnancy thing had gone on for more than one episode, and how this was going to impact her life. The fact that they chose not to have a drawn-out debate about it was probably a wise decision, because I'm not really sure how that plays out. I think there was a scene where she had dismissed the idea of doing anything like that. I don't remember if she actually even referred to her own either sensibilities or religion or whatever it was, but she seemed to be mm-hmm. someone who would not have thought of doing that. I remember she said it was something along that's the type of decision that, you know, that young girls make, not someone in her situation.
Right. And kudos to her, to the husband, for not yelling at her or making her feel guilty over it, but instead going along with it, supporting her and helping out around the house while she recovered.
Yeah, absolutely.
Scott. Good job on that.
Well done, Scott Proctor. that's his character's name. But here's the thing. It's very rare to see a continuing character, either be the main or supporting character on a TV show, get an abortion. People remember that, even if they never saw the show, it's kind of well-known or iconic even that the character Maude did that on the sitcom Maude back in the 70s. It's really hard to think of that many major characters you've seen have an abortion on television over the last 30, 40 years. I know it's happened. You guys can Wikipedia or Google it. You'll come up with probably a few of them. You really don't tend to see it on shows that are meant to be comedies, or at least right. comedic in nature. I'm sure it happened on a nighttime soap opera or two or a couple of things. I know it was on. I know we saw it on *Halt and Catch Fire*, and it was dealt with even on *Mad Men*. But those are dramatic shows. Those are pure drama. But seeing it on a show that's considered lighter in tone, dealing with a subject matter like that, that's exceedingly rare. And it is a risk. And the way the political waves change in this country from year to year, it's a risk to do that, because it's something that they could have gotten phone calls and letters and whatnot sent to the CW or whatever because of people objecting to that, and they might have. I have no idea. I've not looked into this to see if they got any kind of negative backlash about it. But I applaud them for being realistic about it. That this was a major decision for her, and to really do something which was going to be the best situation because of the money and what she wanted to do with the rest of her future. And she already has had two kids. And there's a lot of people who probably watched that and probably didn't agree with what she did. I'm not one of those people, but that's why I think it was a huge risk, and I applaud the show for taking that risk.
Yeah, and I haven't really seen that much of a backlash against the show for doing it.
I think there's been so many other things going on in the world or in this country over the last few weeks that this is the kind of thing that might have gotten overlooked. So maybe it was kind of good timing for them to do that, because people's focus might have been on something else around that time.
Did something happen?
We're not going to talk about it. I'm putting myself on a stasis tube, till 2020. Then everyone can wake me up. Let me know how everything is. Like, what? Should I go back for another 4 years? Okay. I'll do that. Was there anything else that was significant about that one? I think that was kind of it. Really?
No, but give me about 10 minutes and I'll think of something else.
Yeah, of course, once we're finished recording. So let's then go to the last episode that we've seen of the show, which is number 5, and that was, Why is Josh's ex-girlfriend eating carbs? And we get to see Valencia again. I was thrilled that we brought Valencia back. Great character. I guess she runs into Valencia. Where does she run into? Does she run into at the where they always get their smoothies? Whatever.
The juice. Yeah, the juice place.
I forget
what it is.
Yeah, they say it like every episode, and of course I'm forgetting what it is. It's not Jamba Juice, but it's got some goofy name, whatever. Now there's a running gag throughout the episode where she keeps commenting that it appears that Valencia is losing weight throughout the episode. I think that might have been what they did. I'm not sure. Because I remember by the time we got to the end of the episode, I was like, she does kind of look better. Now, it could just be a matter of makeup, or just she just was
dressing better. And the clothes that she was wearing, because I thought she was wearing pretty baggy clothes at the beginning.
Yeah. But it would be kind of funny if they did decide to do that. Like, let's just pat her up just a little bit. And then as the episode goes on, because it'll just be that much more frustrating for someone like Rebecca, whatever.
That's a nice gag.
Yeah, that's great. So I guess the whole point of this episode was Rebecca still clinging to the memories of, well, in this case, more Josh, I guess. So she sees Valencia as an opportunity for someone she can talk about Josh with without fear of, like, Paula getting on her about it or a therapist rolling her eyes about it, whatever. She in her mind, she views Valencia as someone that she has this bond with. Except Valencia is the one who dumped Josh, not the other way around. So it's a little bit different. Obviously Valencia could see the writing on the wall as far as what Josh was doing, but they're very different situations, I think.
Oh yeah, totally different, and that's something that Valencia tries to pound into Rebecca's head at the beginning. But Rebecca just has that way of burrowing into people and making them bend to her will to get what she wants.
Well, yeah, she's incessant. what's the word I'm really looking for? I can't think of it right now, but she's like a steamroller. You just can't get away from her. But persistent, that's it. Persistent. She's the epitome of persistence, that one. So I guess she eventually convinces Valencia to join her at this kind of new agey festival. It's kind of like, it feels like it's kind of like a takeoff on Burning Man to a certain extent.
That's what I thought too.
And now also at this festival, Daryl goes there with White Josh. And that's when I guess Daryl encounters the fact that White Josh has been with other dudes that were also more than a little bit older than him. And Daryl starts believing that, you know, maybe it's almost like a fetish. I'm like, oh, I'm just the latest old guy for you or something. I think that's
Thomas's
take on it.
He's got a type. White Josh is a type.
Right. But I kind of like the way that plays out throughout this episode, because it takes something which could have initially just been purely silly, and then it's played mostly comically for the most part, but it's kind of something people do worry about. Like when you know, if you start and when you get involved with somebody, and then when you become aware of their exes, and if you do see a pattern, you do start to worry. You know, I can think of people when they started going out with someone and then they met the person's father and they realized, oh, I have a lot in common with their dad. Uh-oh. Or something like that. But I think it's in this episode where Daryl and White Josh really have a major conversation, you know, a serious one about their relationship. And correct me if I'm wrong, this is when White Josh brings up the fact that he hasn't met Daryl's daughter yet.
That's correct.
And at this point they've been going out together for it's been at least what, a couple months, I think, at this point.
Yeah, at least.
You know, at a certain point, if you're having a serious relationship and you have a child, and especially if you're acting like it's serious, you introduce your significant other to your child. And Daryl, I know it's interesting because Daryl, you think there might be more of a complication because of the whole bisexuality. I feel like he had that conversation with his daughter last season already, didn't he? I thought he did.
Yeah, I think he did too.
Yeah, I seem to have a recollection of that.
Mm-hmm. And speaking as a single parent, that's something serious that you do. You just can't drop random new people into your kids' lives. You know, you can't change people out like a tire, is what I'm trying to say.
Right.
Like if you introduce them to a child, it's, you want that relationship to be something permanent, not something temporary.
It's not a fly by night kind of a situation.
Right. Speaking of something that's happened to me myself.
Of course. But that's why Josh's point. It's like, how serious are you, can you be about me if you haven't even introduced me to your daughter? I mean, don't tell me you see me a certain way, but you haven't, you know, put me into this part of your life as of yet. Because at that point, Daryl was the one claiming, you know, this was supposed to be the real deal. And, you know, that's... Well, anyway, that's resolved and it's done. And of course, the kid's great. You know, she's adorable.
She goes right along with it, ends up holding both her hands.
There you go. I mean... Because, wow, she's like, wow, you're much cuter than my dad. We also get in this episode Paula starting school, and she makes a new friend. And I like that this interesting part in the episode where I guess they're both in the same outdoor cafe location, whatever. And Paula is there with her new friend. I think his name is Sunil, something like that. And Rebecca is there with... Is she there with both Valencia and Heather at the same time?
Yes, she is.
Okay.
Calling each other bitches.
Yeah, interesting trio. but I really like this idea of this is the first time they feel like they're leading separate lives. And they're both looking, you know, catching glances at each other from across the room. But life has changed now. Because what Paula's doing, I mean, obviously you're going to make friends in class and you're going to have those kind of stories and adventures, and she might tell Rebecca about it, but that's now a different world for her. And if Rebecca's, you know, going to have her group of friends, especially if it's going to be about the Josh stuff and everything else. Well, that's going to have to be separate from Paula too, you know? So I thought that was kind of an interesting dynamic that I hadn't quite expected them to do on the show, but I kind of enjoyed that.
Right. And as you said, it's, you know, it's kind of like they broke up, you know, and they're seeing each other with different, with their new special friend.
Yeah.
In a way.
Well, the show is all about relationships. And it's not, and not just the obvious ones. It's all about the different interconnections between these characters and things that are either being made stronger or made weaker or broken or whatever. And it's an interesting dynamic that's happened now between Paula and Rebecca. And because it's not that they've had a falling out, they've had an understanding. And that was like the whole nature of the contract that Rebecca had to sign. So it's interesting because Paula ends up going along with a scheme in this episode. Actually, she hatches the scheme. Doesn't she hatch the scheme to get that guy's app or something?
Yeah, I believe so.
although I kept wondering, you don't got Google?
Why don't you just research it? You don't have to do all this.
That's pretty easy. It's really easy. I do it all the time. Apps, you just do a search for anything. Oh, there it is. But then you don't have a plot. And I think she more wanted to screw up the guy's thing anyway. But I thought that was pretty funny. I actually used, did he say it was Nunya?
Yes, he said it was Nunya.
Yeah, I ended up using that the next day in a conversation. Yeah, where are you from? Nunya. Nunya? Yeah, none of your business. Try to think of anything notable song-wise in that episode. Well, they did have that really fascinating Triceratops ballet number that went on. It felt like it went on a little bit too long for my taste, although it was funny. It just seemed to come on forever.
It was weird. It was weird. And the fact that, you know, they both woke up, one was angry and one was, I didn't have a voice it felt, but I just know that Rebecca came out angry.
it was more avant-garde than I think we would have expected for the show.
Then yeah, again, weren't expecting ballet numbers.
Oh, one of the things that made me laugh a lot in this episode was not simply the fact that that Valencia and Rebecca's scheme was to urinate on Josh's equipment or the board, whatever. It was the fact that her car keys were apparently kept somewhere, and I literally like, oh, so what, you actually had your keys in your underwear? I was like, yeah, that's where I had them. And I was like, okay, I love the fact that this show just made that joke. That's just amazing.
You think that'd be very uncomfortable?
I would think so, but you know, maybe Rebecca's made of stronger stuff than we think. And also,
the only other song is Thought Bubbles. That's the only other song that's sung by Josh and sung by the blonde girl at the end.
Yeah, it looks like Josh might have another girl on his radar now, because it's one of the things about this episode. We find out that Josh is someone who can't be alone for very long, apparently. I kind of like the Thought Bubbles number up to a point. I like the little silly little animation things that they were adding and how he kept derailing himself. Mm-hmm. But if I have to pick the character I least care about hearing sing songs on the show, it's usually Josh. I was like, oh God, please, let's just move on. But at least that one was kind of cute.
He's actually had a couple good songs. He had that one and the Ping Pong Girl song too.
It was okay. I just think of the song numbers from the first season I really didn't like, that were classic. Okay, the whole boy band stuff. I want to fast forward this now, please.
Yeah, I didn't like that one either.
Yeah. And it's a shame, because when you actually listen to the lyrics of some of those songs, there's wit going on there, but I just don't like the song. I don't like the style. I don't want to have to sit through it. Let's move this along. And that's pretty much where we are in the season. We're 5 episodes in. I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, I believe it's a 13-episode season this year. They've cut their order to 13 for season 2. I think.
Yeah, I think they gave it a half season because of iZombie.
Well, CW had to figure out how they were going to juggle the shows that they have, and so they're kind of shortened the order for several shows. It's hard to really knock them for that, because the strongest shows that we watch nowadays on TV tend to be the shows that have anywhere from 8 to 13 episodes, following more of the cable or Netflix model. Quite frankly, even 13 is too many for certain for a lot of shows. It should really just be like 10. So,
talking to you, Marvel shows. Talking to you, Marvel shows.
Among others. or pretty much any show on Netflix. So look how brilliant Stranger Things was. 8 episodes, it left you wanting more. Other shows, it's going on forever, please. So we're not quite halfway through the season, but it does mean it makes for tighter storytelling, I guess. So I'm really enjoying this so far. I mean, yes, I do miss the old opening theme, but you know, I just listened to it on YouTube about 17 times today before we did our opening number ourselves. So I kind of don't need to hear it again.
Yeah, you think that kind of brilliance that we did at the beginning happens without practice? No way.
God. So bad. So embarrassed. Anyway.
I love it.
I think what we're going to try to do, hopefully, I figure since we've done episodes 1 through 5 for the season, maybe we'll see if we can regroup again to do episodes, say, 6 through 10 when that time comes. And then we can just knock off the final 3 and a final Crazy Ex-Girlfriend podcast for the season. I feel like that's a good way to divvy it up. Does it make sense?
I like that.
Right. Just came up with that word just now. No, I didn't. All right. Anything else you want to say about the show or anything else before we start to wrap things up here?
I just want to say thanks again to Lee for turning me on to the show. I can't believe that I liked it as much as I did from the beginning. This particular episode is episode number 148.
Oh, of our podcast.
Of our podcast, that's right. And, you know, also kind of funny, again, how we sang that song, and you just like, it's a serious TV drama podcast. It's such a dichotomy. that kills me.
Well, you know, what are you going to do? I don't want to change the title of our podcast on because it looks nice and uniform on iTunes.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Yeah. But I'm just like... people expecting Fargo. No, you get a musical number at the beginning.
Oh, Fargo, where are you? Next year. All right, so if you enjoyed this podcast, you'd probably enjoy being on our Facebook page as well. It's a Serious TV Drama Podcast. Type that into Facebook, you'll find our page. Like the page and join the conversation about shows like Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, as well as any number of other shows. We seem to talk a lot about CW shows, and we're too old for
yes, that. That's all we do.
Very strange. for the folks out there who are not into the superhero stuff, I feel ya, I understand. There will be other podcasts that will cover other shows, and Dan and I are planning a pair of podcasts in the next few weeks. They're going to cover a bunch of other things that we've been watching, both old and new, over the last few months. So hopefully the folks that have been wondering, hey, do you guys even have a podcast? Because I don't give a fuck about superhero crap. We will have some things for you. And I might try a few other things, branch out on my own for a couple of things. We don't know. Just throwing shit out there.
And this one was for you guys.
Right. You can all, and if you enjoyed this podcast, you should also look us up on iTunes. We're the Serious TV Drama Podcast there as well. You can subscribe to our feed as well as rate and review us. 5-star ratings are always appreciated. If you think that we were really, didn't know what the heck we were talking about or really seemed unprepared, then, you know, you can skip the whole rating and review thing. We don't need to know that guy again. And finally, you can follow us on Twitter. Our handle there is at STVD Podcast. That's STVD as in Serious TV Drama Podcast. And that's about it. Jason, I want to thank you for being able to make time to talk about Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. I know it's one of your favorite shows, so I'm glad that we could chat about it tonight.
It is. Glad to be here. Always glad to do one of these shows.
All right, and with that, I will say good night.
Good night, everybody.
I banged you here, I nailed you there, and on this couch,
and in this chair,
in the doorway,
the hallway,
on every stair,
we tapped that ass all over this house.
sometimes him, sometimes me, though never simultaneously. But one of us was hitting it usually. We tapped that ass all over this house. You'll never escape us, 'cause we live in your head. Just two swell dudes that you screwed here
and here
and there
and here
and even occasionally in your bed.
That bed is really uncomfortable.
Right? It's like a prison cot.
On the stove,
over the sink,
and sort of in the fridge one time, I think.
And then we hit the back patio.
That's where we hit your back patio. We tapped that ass all over this house. How many times did we tap that behind?
Well, let's estimate.
On an average day, I would have to say 5, 6, 7, 8.
What? Too cheeky?
Hey, does this ring a bell?
A little to the left.
Oh, okay now. A little to the right.
Oh, wait. Back to the left.
Right there.
No, you're doing it wrong. I'll do it myself.
Barkeep, what's on tap?
It's me and my ass.
Ooh, sounds refreshing.
On the table, you were willing and able.
On the ottoman, you took a lot of men.
And on the safe in the closet, I made a deposit.
I also tapped that ass all over this house.
Let's wrap this up with a big finish!
But where should we finish?
Please, not on my chest. No, you'll scratch it!
On the accent wall,
on the bathroom floor.
You didn't care where,
you just wanted more.
How much more tapping could one ass endure? We tapped that ass,
tapped that ass,